Therapy Insiders is brought to you by Verve, makers of the Arc, a revolutionary neck pain relief and postural support device, available now at www.goarcnow.com, and by Edge Mobility System. Give your mobility the edge. Available at www.edgemobilitysystem.com.
Hello, welcome back to Therapy Insiders. I'm Dr. Gene Schirakerbrod, here with Dr. Joe Palmer, Dr. Erson Religioso, and our special guest today is someone that's been doing a lot of good in the world of physical therapy, and she's probably, or her company has been helping you, chances are, because her company, you might have heard of it, it's called WebPT, has the largest share in the EMR market in PTs. And she's helping you because the software actually works well. And when EMR software works well, that means you can get your notes done and you can go home. Or if you own a clinic like Joe, you can get paid in time. So our guest today is Dr. Heidi Janenga. Thanks for joining us, Heidi. How are you today?
I'm doing well. It's an honor to be here. Thank you.
Well, appreciate the kind words. Honors all ours, and we'll start on that high note and see where we end up. So it's been really cool watching your company, not just in terms of EMR, but just the entire kind of ecosystem, so to speak, that you're building. Because I check in on your website a lot for just information, for advice, for blog posts, which are super detailed, but also very easy to read. And have you seen
webinars?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, webinars.
Have you seen the point of kind of integrating everything? Is just aside from building a successful EMR company, it's I'm guessing just to include the profession and grow the profession and move forward and kind of pay it forward a little bit. That's kind of what I get from you guys because you offer so much free stuff.
Sure. Our sort of mission is actually to achieve greatness in therapy practice. And, you know, we believe, especially with a therapist like myself at the helm, that starts a lot with education. And we've really evolved into being a resource for the industry through all the means that you guys mentioned. And, you know, it's extremely important for us to have a place that people can come to, regardless if you're a WebPT user or not, because there's really not a whole lot of avenues for people to find that information. And as you mentioned, in a palatable, easy to read fashion. And so we kind of saw a gap in that component of the education and resources that were available to PTs in general, and we really wanted to help fill that gap. The American Physical Therapy Association puts out a ton of information, and it is good, but most of it, as you might know, is, you know, behind the firewall of having to be a member of the APTA, and if you're not, then you really don't have access to that. And I think the numbers right now are 30% of PTs. It's pretty small. 30% of PTs are actually part of the association. So that leaves a whole bunch of people without a true resource to, you know, aggregate a bunch of information from all different sources and kind of put it in one place.
Yeah, and it's really dry information too. And it's so hard to read stuff. It's one of the reasons we got the show started. It's just I was just so tired of once searching for countless stuff, and then when I found something, it's just so terrible to just drudge through. And it's refreshing to see something that's up to date, that's not only easy to read in terms of the content, but it's actually easy to read. You know, the layout is great, the flow is great. So it's kind of fun to look at that and absorb information. And without any distractions, but that's me in terms of the website. I know Joe's going to have a little bit different perspective because he actually uses WebPT. So, Joe, what do you think? How's Web PT? It's not like you have the owner or anything on the podcast, but don't hold back.
I think it's great. I think it helps keep us compliant, and we do use their educational resources to help train our staff, and they do them on practical and applicable topics. So the next one's on the 7 deadly sins of PT billing. So, you know, I'm excited about that and trying to always improve. So, yeah, I do like Web PT, and you know, there's no perfect system. You know, sorry, Heidi, but
no, that's okay, and it's the truth. I mean, we're constantly improving. We work in software framework called agile development, which means that you work in an iterative process. So you're constantly reviewing what you've sort of delivered. And as we listen to our customers, we're constantly updating and enhancing the product, adding new features based on the feedback that we get from our members, which is what we call our customers. And I appreciate the feedback and the positive feedback on the blog and the, you know, we have 1,700 people already scheduled to attend our webinar on Friday.
That's it?
And so, yeah, that's it. I mean, and it'll probably go over 2,000 for sure, because we always have a lot of last minute folks. But I mean, that's just a tribute to the amazing team that we have here at WebPT. Some our content developers, our, you know, the graphic designers that help to you know, put the visualization of the cool iconography that we use and all of the graphic design. I mean, it's a team effort. Like, we've really garnered an amazing group of folks that have embraced the profession as if it was their own. You can see the passion that comes through in the things that they're writing, and you know, even the graphics that you see. I mean, that's really a culmination of people buying into the vision that we've established here at WebPT. So it's extremely rewarding for me to see that.
And I want to touch a little bit more on that, Heidi, because I want you to delve into how you foster that buy-in, because interestingly enough, my wife and I were on vacation in Jamaica, mm-hmm. and we ran into one of your staff members at our resort.
Really?
His name will remain out of the podcast, but he was extremely happy with the environment and the culture that you guys created in Arizona there, and
that was before he knew you were going to be on the podcast. So
this is well before. I just happened to run into the guy, and all of a sudden we're talking, and he says, "Yeah, I work for a EMR company in Arizona," and I said, "No way! You work for WebPT?" and so we talked for a bit, but so talk about how you developed that culture.
Yeah, so I mean, it's been an interesting ride. I mean, I'll just give you a little bit of history about the company quickly here. So the idea spawned out of a necessity that I had in my clinics. I was running 3 clinics for physiotherapy associates here in Tempe, and you know, the challenge for me having to be responsible for P&L was maintaining a bottom line, and one of our biggest expenses was transcription and dictation. And so I had just started dating my now husband, Brad, who is a software engineer, and sort of proposed the problem to him of, hey, a lot of our referring physicians are starting to adopt EMRs. There's got to be something out there for therapists. Can you go out and see what's out there? And so he did, and came back and said, here's what it's going to cost. And it was like $30,000 out of the gate, $10,000 maintenance fees yearly. And it's just not something, even to the size of my clinics that I had at that time, that I was really going to be able to afford. And so we decided to put our heads together and build something that was really just for my clinics at the time. Before I knew it, I mean, it took us about a year to put something together. Before I knew it, I had, you know, a few of my other directors around town that were asking, hey, what are you using? And we had 10 clinics up and running in within 6 months in what we called our beta at that point. We did some market research, and at that point, 80% of physical therapists were using pen and paper, and this is back in 2008. So we decided, oh my gosh, I think we stumbled onto something here. Let's launch the product. And at that point, it was really just documentation. And we stepped out on the floor at CSM in 2008, in February of 2008, with our first employee, who was a salesperson who hadn't got paid for the last 3 months that he worked for us and had learned HTML to help build our first website. And
life
and all
of
these
a
really
startup.
Amazing,
it's beautiful.
Exactly. The life of a startup. And we sold 5 clinics that month, and we have had our next best month every single month after that. So it's just been an incredible ride. I mean, we have, in 2015, 250 employees now in 30,000 square feet in the warehouse district of downtown Phoenix.
And you just built that, right? Isn't that a new building?
Well, we're moving into a new building hopefully within the next nine to 12 months, but we have moved into a new building, yes, from where we were. I'm sure what our nameless employee had told you about. We had just moved into the space we are now, but we're already kind of busting at the seams of this one. So we have our plans to move into 60,000 square feet, which is right across the street.
So do you do a housewarming party like every time? Do we expect invites?
Kinda, we need to. Sure, absolutely. We always throw good parties here at this company.
They good parties, Gene.
All right, you heard it here. It's documented on record.
Absolutely. PPS, you will definitely get an invite. But through that process, you know, when we first started our company, my husband and I really wanted to build a place that we wanted to come to work every day. And as you know, in a startup, you spend a lot more hours at work than you do anywhere else. And in most jobs, you do that as well. And so we wanted to create an environment that we really wanted to come to every day. And the original sort of values of the company stemmed out of sort of Brad and I's our own values. And at the end of to about 2009, 2010, we started really having to hire quite a few more people. And at that point, we started losing that sort of culture that we felt like we had, you know, begun to develop. And at that point, we had this ritual that we did every single year, in which we sat around with every employee right after New Year's, so kind of our New Year's resolution meeting, and we talked about what did we do well last year. What do we have on tap right now, and what are we going to do better at in the coming year? And this particular year, we decided to also talk about who are we, define ourselves as a company, what do we want to be, and what kind of employees do we want to really go after? And we filled up a gigantic whiteboard full of words. And these were words that came out of the 26 employees that we had at that point in time. And we distilled that down into what we now call our team commitments. And our team commitments, there's our first one is creating raving fans. We have an accountability, and I'm not sure if we can cuss on the air, but it's called Fuck Up, Own Up. It's really our accountability value, because we know we're a rapidly evolving company and mistakes are going to be made. We want people to feel like they can be creative and take risk. But if you make a mistake, own up to it and try to fix it, and don't let anybody else make that same mistake you made. So learn from it. Possess true grit is another one. It's about attitude and coming to the table with your A game every single day. Be minty is about personality. Be rock solid is about the work ethic and the sort of dependability that we want each person to come to the table with. And then we have community outreach. So we do a lot of giving back as an organization to local other businesses here in town, as well as charities. And then our last two are new. As of last year, we added Do Moss with Manos, which is really about resource efficiency. And then our last one is about health and wellness and living better too. We do a lot of promotion around health and wellness within our organization. No pop machines. You're not going to find any pop machines around here. We just rolled out a anti-smoking or non-smoking campus rule, those types of things. So, you know, we really established those core values to set up expectations for employees coming in, but also kind of giving them a bumper system in which you understand the expectations. And when you come up to, it allows autonomy. So if you come up to decision-making places, that if you're vetting up the decision that you're about to make up against those core values, you're probably going to make the same decision that I would make in an executive chair as would, you know, a customer service rep talking to a customer. And so
what it also seems like what you've created is an environment of chances, creativity, and risk without the fear of repercussion, right? You give people the ability to make mistakes by making hopefully at least attempt at solid decision. But mistakes happen, like you said, and I think that's a transcendent topic of whether you're in business or even, and we have, you know, we have a lot of DPT students that listen, and I know one of the things that when we get students in the clinic and they make a mistake and they're always, well, you know, they say, I'm sorry, or they're very tentative, and, you know, I always tell them is, it's not about that you make the mistake, it's if you make the mistake again. Right. You can make mistakes. It's part of the learning process. You learn from your mistakes more than you do the successes. But if you keep making the same mistake over and over again, that's when it becomes an issue and problematic for everyone. And it's, you know, it's great to hear that a company that's growing like yours, like you said, is just free to let their employees really take those risks.
Yeah, we were with you guys, Heidi, when you put those out. I guess you sent them to, I guess you sent those values to all of your WebPT users, but
yep.
I definitely got a kick out of that one, especially. and I love it. You know, you're right. Fuck up, own up. That's great.
Well, you've seen us demonstrate that on a couple different occasions. If we did have some downtime, I mean, we recognize, we were fully out there and transparent. Listen, we effed up, right? And what do we do in return? We usually credit you with some sort of credit on your invoice or do something to show you, hey, listen, we understand we're a mission critical application and we screwed up. So here's how we're owning up.
Yeah, I think that's really important for a company. So, you know, one of the things I love dealing with is just basically the, you know, the ignoramus customer who didn't read instructions right, didn't read the description properly, and they're basically blaming me and they're threatening to leave negative reviews online. And so, you know, how do you tell your customer service to deal with people like that, you know, for retention? And because I think that's very important. A lot, you know, a lot of people feel ignored by larger companies.
Yeah, so we are one of the only companies that offers our customers. We truly believe in our business model, which is a SaaS business, which is software as a service, that we believe in the service component. And we built our company based on a foundation of amazing customer service or, you know, excellent customer service. So we're one of the only, actually, I think we're the only EMR company that does not charge you a service fee for live calls. So we have, you know, live bodies here right in Arizona that are taking our customers' calls when they have a problem or answering emails when they send us a support ticket and they have a question about something. And we emphasize listening skills because I think a lot of times when you call in to a business, 9 times out of 10, the reason is not a positive one. It's not to tell them how great they are. It's because you're having a problem. And so how the person on the other line receives the information and listens to what your actual problem is extremely important. We talk about not assuming anything, right? Because too often we're just trying to solve a problem immediately and don't actually listen to the real issues that might be being talked about by the customer. So we really do a lot of training for listening and understanding and getting to the root of the problem so that we can actually help specifically find out exactly what the issues are and then try to solve it.
So that's great because, you know, hearing and listening are not necessarily the same things. Because if somebody's telling you a problem, especially if you're working in customer support and you've heard a similar problem before, your mind just kind of goes on autopilot. You tune out the problem and you say, have you tried this, this, and this as a script versus actually listening to the person and responding to them and responding to their concerns and addressing those first and then trying to fix the problem if it's something that's fixable.
Yeah, we are definitely anti-script.
That's a good thing.
That's the first thing I say actually when I'm on online and I have a question for someone, either whether I'm online or on the phone. Like, I don't want you to read your script. And 9 times out of 10, they just plow through with the script.
Yeah. I think they have to. Those companies that just have the script and they're always being watched and evaluated. I've had
Trying to get them fired.
Yeah, exactly. I've had several patients that work for Verizon, and they say it is hell working for service for Verizon. It's just, it's like Office Space. If you watched Office Space with the guy walking around with the mug, they said they just pretty much have those guys walking around nonstop. And I feel so bad for them. I feel so, so sorry for them.
Yeah. Those are those people that you just know could go postal at any moment in time, right?
Yeah, watch out, copy machine going gangsta.
All right.
Moral of the story, Heidi, don't be Verizon.
Yeah, right. Don't be a Verizon. Well, you know, with our number one value of creating raving fans, at the end of the day, we really look at NPS score very closely. I think you guys also understand what that is, the Net Promoter Score. And it's kind of a very blunt instrument to understand like where your customer is on sort of a loyalty scale. And at the end of the day, we're trying to create as many promoters as we possibly can, those loyal kind of enthusiastic WebPT ambassadors like you, Joe, who go out of their way, right?
To get you on the podcast.
Joe, you're an ambassador now. You've been upgraded.
Right.
All right. I'll take it.
I like how it sounds.
I am going to ask you a hard question now.
Okay.
I want to know what the future is for all of us WebPT users out here. Because we've been anxiously awaiting, Heidi, anxiously awaiting, and you've been dangling the carrot for a long time, and you recently bought Web Outcomes, and I want you to break the news right here on our podcast. When is that going to full roll out?
So our intentions are to fully roll that out in June of 2015. I should take that back as fully roll out because I think we're actually intentionally going to do a little bit of a beta prior to going the full rollout.
Soft rollout.
A soft rollout, exactly. And so, Web Outcomes is extremely important to us as a adjunct to our overall sort of mission, because we understand how important outcomes are, and we're sitting on a pile of data, but right now the outcomes data is really what is the focus of not only insurance companies but the focus of the industry at the moment. And so we're taking a slightly different approach. I don't know how much you know about Web Outcomes. We're taking a slightly different approach. Rather than going with a proprietary outcome platform, we're coming out with the 5 most utilized outcome measures that are being used today in PT, and then going to be able to, so you can keep doing what you're doing, basically, and not have to switch and use some other proprietary software.
Right. And I do know that. And I feel like that's great as long as I want to know that when the bottom line, when the Center for Medicare Services starts relying on these for payment, are they going to you be able to use your outcomes, or are, because right now
they're already using our outcomes.
Well, they're already using the outcome measures. Like right now, Photo is accredited. What's the other one that's accredited? APAC, AMPAC, or something is also. accredited for the outcomes measures. I just, will they be able to take, I know your outcomes are based on standardized scales, LEFS, NDI, Oswestry. Are they going to recognize those as measures for payment?
Those are already recognized as measures for payment. So the when you get audited, if you get audited, hopefully you don't get audited.
Yeah, let's not do that.
Don't even say that word.
Let's knock on some wood somewhere.
That's
I'm
getting edited out. That's that was never said.
Appreciate that. Moving on.
When people review your notes to meet the criteria of performing an outcome measure that you're supposed to do on every initial exam, all of those that we have, including photo and all of the ones out there, all of those are accredited. When you do your PQRS and you are required to do a functional outcome measure, all of those are listed as accredited outcome tools. So it is already accredited to this day.
So to take a quick step back, let's, for the audience, either DPT students or people in the clinic that are working to have no idea what these acronyms mean, or for someone that doesn't even know what an outcome measure is, because that could be confusing in itself. If you just give a brief outline of what outcomes are, why they're important for insurance and EMR and billing and Medicare, and what PQRS is, I'm sure people are catching up on that. That'd be good, I think, especially for our DPT students.
Okay, so we'll start with outcomes. Outcome measures or outcome tools are tools that you can utilize, and there's two ways of collecting data for outcomes. There's functional outcomes, which are usually completed by a therapist with the patient. But the patient is performing activities in which the therapist is either monitoring time or repetitions or some sort of measurement that's being done by the therapist.
It's like a 6-minute walk test or something like
exactly,
that.
Exactly, yes. And then there's the subjective or the patient-centered outcomes, which basically the patient is filling out some sort of form like the Oswestry or the LEFS, the lower extremity functional scale, in which it is a rating that the patient will give on certain functional activities that in ADLs that they are experiencing. So it's their interpretation of their level of independence, let's say, for certain activities. So there's two types of outcomes. And outcomes have been a big focus of as of late, because CMS has required it for quite a long time. And then PQRS, which is the Physician's Quality Reporting System, has also emphasized that. And that, as of 2013, has become not mandatory, but it has become, if you don't do it, you basically get penalized. And what the gist of it is that basically they want to see and be able to show progress throughout your episode of care. So an outcome measure is done at the initial exam, usually at your next progress note or reevaluation, and then upon discharge. And what you want to see throughout the care is hopefully progress. And if you don't see that, then that's an indicator of potentially either changing your treatment practice or whatever. You need to do a reassessment based on that information that you're receiving. And hopefully over time what you want to be able to see is a change, and each outcome tool has a minimally clinically important difference, which is called the MCID, that you should be able to show within the time period within your episode of care.
That's great. I think that's so many terms, and I think it's hard to process a lot of times, especially for students or younger clinicians that get these terms thrown out at them. And I think might be sometimes subconscious about asking people what that means, because everyone keeps talking about it, but no one actually explains what it is. So I think it's good to actually hear.
But we have some- and correct me if I'm Heidi, what you're saying is that you're using the full tool. You're using the full outcome measure, whereas proprietary software, they take you through questions and guide you through, and they don't make you take the whole test. So your version is going to be the full tool that everybody across the board uses, and it doesn't based on your answers, it does the questions don't change. Is that my understanding? Is that correct?
That's correct. And what we're trying to do is actually get more information, more data. So many people already use the Oswestry. So many people already use the Lower Extremity Functional Scale, the NDI, the Neck Disability Index. Those are common outcome tools that have been used for many, many years and are still being used today. And one of the most important things about those tools is that they are understood cross-disciplinary. So physicians, orthopedic surgeons understand the lower extremity functional scale. Spine surgeons know what the Oswestry, they're using the Oswestry. So the scores are meaningful to more than just the PT industry. They are spanning the entire episode of treatment that a patient might receive from the time that they go see their primary care physician to the time that they have spinal surgery to come to therapy. If you can imagine being able to watch an Oswestry change throughout the entire time that a patient is within the healthcare system, that is incredibly more meaningful than having a score that means nothing to anyone, or people within our own industry don't even know what the score means, to then tell an orthopedic surgeon, oh, my X score, and I'm not going to name any names, my X score is this. Sorry.
Right. I completely understand.
Understand. So we have a couple questions for you from Twitter.
Okay.
So Andy Parsons, which is kind of on this topic, Andy Parsons at Parsons DPT asked, will EMRs ever talk to each other intelligently?
Great question. Interoperability is a huge topic. Right now, some of our team was just at HIMSS this past week, which is a huge healthcare technology conference. And it's a major topic of discussion because of Meaningful Use 3, which includes a mandate around interoperability. So the answer is yes. And people ask, well, why hasn't it happened sooner? Part of the reason is because the landscape of EMR is very, very fragmented. There are multiple players, especially in the physician market. And there is no standard of talking, quote unquote, talking to each other at this point. There's a lot of progress that's being made with some standards in healthcare language, in software speak. But to date, there still isn't any standards. And so personally, from WebPT's standpoint, we are currently looking at this very closely. We currently already integrate with a lot of billing software so that they can communicate back and forth. So that's a one level or one step towards further interoperability. But, again, a little secret, our next sort of step is to really look at kind of how do we integrate with more physician EMR so that, referrals can flow freely, outcome data can flow freely back and forth, notes can flow freely where you don't actually have to fax anything anymore. It still baffles me that.
What a sweet, magical world you paint.
It's not very far off, I'm telling you right now.
Hey, well, even the electronic faxes, I mean, that's so much easier. I mean, it's two clicks and you're done. I mean, it's a great world.
I hate fax. I mean, that's just throw it out there. We're going all honesty here. It should be gone by now.
Well, you look at any other industry. You look at any other industry and they look at us like we're idiots because we still love faxes.
Speaking of Andy asked several questions. So another question from him, which transitions of technology, is he asks, why is healthcare so behind in PC tech? His example is, my hospital's default browser is Internet Explorer 8. Well, before you answer that, first, Andy, go to a different hospital. Good God, man. all right, go ahead. All you, Heidi.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting question. I don't know that I have a really good answer for it outside of the fact that too often we have been okay with status quo and just falling back on, well, this is how we've always done it, so why do we need to change? It's working, it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of attitude. And, you know, when we first came out with our, we were the first web-based product in the industry, and I can't tell you how many questions we got about, oh, is my PHI going to be safe? And our, you know, our response was, well, do you do online banking? And of course the answer was yes. And they could not fathom and understand how what I do in my personal life and my smartphone and all of these, you know, apps that I'm using in my personal life, I can't translate that into healthcare for whatever reason. Like they, it's like this different world that you step in. And so what we're trying to do is obviously bridge that gap. And I think it's happening very rapidly now. But for whatever reason, you know, that was the first thing that my husband came home and said, what is wrong with your industry? Like, seriously, this, there's no web-based applications in PT. You're a mobile profession. Like, you never sit behind the desk. Why are there not web-based applications?
Now, what about HIPAA? That's another thing Andy asked. Are we too scared of HIPAA to move forward with EMR innovation? Are we really limited? What kind of protection do we need to put in, and what can we say, what can we say?
That's a really good question. And if you're using a server-based system, then you really should be looking into that. If you look at, you know, the data that's out there on where the breaches, most breaches are happening, it's, you know, someone smashes and grabs and comes in and steals a server from, you know, your front office person's desk and gets all your PHI data because it's all sitting right there under the desk, versus, you know, a web-based application, much more safe. But then you read about the news and you've got Target and, you know, all the PCI issues that are happening with credit cards. So, you know, it's something that we're extremely cognizant about. People always ask me, you know, what's the one thing that keeps you up at night in your business? And I'll be honest, a HIPAA breach is definitely something that keeps me up at night. But I know that we have incredible amounts of money and people that are specifically watching and building things to make sure that doesn't happen here at WebPT. We've got incredible resources that are just very focused on making sure that we have every piece of security that you could ever imagine guarding, you know, our data, because that is one of our biggest, most important assets. And we understand that.
That's right. You got the big guys with the muscle shirts standing there guarding the servers.
Well, that's what happens at our co-location facility where actually our servers are held. We have, the co-location facilities are these gigantic warehouses that hold all of the servers. And we always like to tell it's really incredible. Like if you've never been to one, our one here in Phoenix is houses, you know, GoDaddy and Google and all kinds of gigantic server, you know, farms right within the same, like we're right next to some of these big name companies. And
that's impressive.
In order to get in, I have to tell you this real story real quick. In order to get it in, you have to go through what they call a man trap. And so it's this cylindrical device. After obviously you show your ID and they, you know, triple check you of you say you have all the IDs that you need. You walk into this cylindrical, like bulletproof mechanism where it opens halfway. You walk in, it closes behind you. So you're literally in this tube. It's weighing you to make sure that you are about the same weight that when they first, you know, you first came in for the first time. Then you put your eyes up to this retinal scan and it does the retinal scan to basically make sure that you are who you are. And if you pass all of those things, then it opens up the other side and allows you to walk into the actual facility. It's awesome.
Wow.
What happens if you don't pass?
Then you're stuck and you're never walking out. Those muscle shirt guys come with their AK-47s and they come escort you somewhere else.
You are stuck in there until you lose the 3 pounds that you gained and you're allowed to enter, Joe.
Exactly.
They will starve that weight off of you, then you're allowed to walk through.
I'm never the same weight. That would be terrifying.
That has better security than airport security. If you fly a lot and you complain, you have no room to complain anymore.
I think they give you the same plus or minus that you get on your goniometer, at least plus or minus 5, if not 10. So I think you're
all right.
Okay.
All right. That's good. So you talked about this conference. What about this conference? Did anything new come out of it? Anything good come out of the conference? HEMS? HEMS,
okay. Yeah. A lot of validation of sort of what our roadmap is looking like in the next 6 to 12 months, which is always extremely good. The interoperability piece was big. The importance of data, extremely important right now. There are a lot of acquisitions. IBM has bought quite a few different data companies healthcare data companies in which they're really trying to aggregate and understand more around morbidity and any kind of thing that you'd want to know about humans. They're trying to collect all of this data and aggregate it and analyze it and understand us better as a race, I guess, a human race, which is interesting, but you know, it's where we're going, and we understand that, and we're sitting on a pile of it, so
interesting we're gonna be in a slightly terrifying way.
Yes, exactly. I was going to say it's very big brotherish, but you know, at the end of the day, that's where we are.
So, speaking of big companies, have you? I don't know if you can talk about this or not, but have you ever been approached, or have you been approached yet by a bigger data company interested in the mergers or takeovers? Is that something that's kind of always in the back of your mind, or you're not interested in something like that?
Today, we're not interested in anything like that. We get, literally, I have an inbox, at least 5 emails probably a week of companies interested in sort of knocking on our door to see what we're doing. And, I talked to you a little bit about earlier, we came into a partnership last year with Battery Ventures out of Silicon Valley. So we have Silicon Valley money is backing WebBT, which is super awesome and super awesome for the industry for them to take note. I mean, they had been following us actually for 2 years. So really love the relationship we have there. And they've opened doors to us that we never dreamed that we could actually have. We've sat with the CTO of Netflix and all kinds of really highfalutin people. It's pretty awesome. Really but cool. we were sticking to our vision and really staying focused on the PT rehab space, and basically gonna just kill it, gonna continue to kill it.
Figuratively, not literally.
That's awesome.
Great.
Yes, not literally.
obviously.
Heidi, I had one question actually. It was from a different view because I used to be a clinical peer reviewer for a company that we just took, several HMOs data, and we did a peer review and we did a lot of Q&A. So I looked at WebPT from a different standpoint. I mean, I've used it a few times through on-site physio, but I don't know if you know their company. They just do like home health. So I've actually used it as a software or a web app, and I liked it, but not enough. I can't comment it from Joe's perspective, but
sure.
from a reviewer's perspective, I liked it because, like you said, 80% when you started were using pen and paper, and I felt like it was way more than 80%. Even as I think I finally quit doing that maybe 3 years ago now, or even 2 years ago, and it was still, I'd say, well over 50% were using pen and paper. So I liked it from a legibility standpoint. And mm-hmm. when we were auditing, people would get docked, of course, if you had illegible notes. But mm-hmm. the one thing that stood out, at least in the tri-state area of New Jersey, some Pennsylvania, and mostly New York that we were reviewing, was that people were using WebPT and they were just cutting and pasting over and over again, and then asking for more visits. And the only thing they would change was like the Oswestry or the NDI or the LEFS or the DASH, like the outcome measures that we were asking for. But they weren't, when we would go to review their notes, they didn't mm-hmm. correlate with the data that the patients were giving them. So
right.
I was wondering if you could implement some sort of flag that would prevent that, because I think that they should be held accountable. And we would even tell them, like, look, you're not going to get more people on copying and pasting your notes. And I don't really, that's not even ethical. Paging is like your timestamp.
Right.
Is there something that could be implemented to prevent that?
Of course. Word recognition and things like that that we could implement. Part of the philosophy that we sort of started with too is because there actually are AMRs out there, strict and rigid in terms of, what you're able and not able to do. And we have really tried to ride the line of understanding that we are doctorate level professionals who should take responsibility for our documentation and what we're trying to communicate to the physician and to the insurance company via our notes. And that's sort of taking the high road, but we've had to sort of, because of the demand that our customers are asking for, to put more rigid in play. But we haven't gone down that path of can't, still put the words that you want to put in there, right? I mean, it would be no different than if you were writing the same note over and over again on a piece of paper. You still have to take responsibility for the note that you're creating, whether it's done on an EMR or if it's done on pen and paper. But the overriding, what I feel like the overriding issue is around efficiency. And that's really what we are trying to achieve with WebPT. And again, we're trying to improve, every time we do release or trying as we continue to evolve the software is really around the efficiency component. The burden of the amount of documentation that has been created by PQRS, by functional limitation reporting, by the fear of auditing and what one auditor might want and another auditor might want, there's just no consistency. So the therapists feel like, shit, I just got to write it all. And that's really not the case, right? Or they copy and paste because maybe they liked what they wrote this time and it's like the same for the patient every single time. It's kind of this conundrum that we're in, right? That you have to take responsibility for what you're writing. I can't tell you what to write because most people don't like the canned response sort of system where I'm just going to give you choices and you have to pick from these, which inevitably comes out with the same outcome because they pick the same one and you're saying the same thing over and over again. So it's kind of this conundrum that we live in of trying to allow autonomy but yet still provide structure and compliance factors and rules that govern kind of how you're able to move through your notes, if that makes sense. But yes, is there something we could do? We could, absolutely. We could lock it down.
Yeah, please don't do that, Heidi. Please don't.
Well, I mean, I was looking at it from...
He's not paying you, Heidi. Don't listen to him.
But so in other words...
I just thought that maybe it could say something like, or you would need maybe at least... 10% of the note to be unique. Not like 100%. I'm just saying, but literally I've seen the same exact note 20 times over. I mean, it was extreme cases. I mean, I understand that people are busy and a lot of times things don't change, but then when you see the same exact thing over and over again, it kind of gets, and I know,
you deny
obviously.
Their visits, Erson.
That's
you
right.
I did. I mean, I was happy to deny them. And I even said, like, look, if you keep on doing this, you're never going to get any visits. And
I think,
from the same lazy people. We're just lazy.
That are trying to make sure that our therapists don't do that. But the fact of the matter is that the ability to have things that you do on a regular basis flow through to the next note is a huge time saver for a therapist. Therapists can spend another couple minutes interacting with a patient because they know that their manual therapy flowed through and they just have to add one thing. then that's worth it to us, and we'll check our staff on the back end. We'll audit on the back end to make sure that's not happening, that cloning is not going on a regular basis. I feel like you do have to be personally responsible for what you're documenting.
Heidi, I think you should make a sassy version WebPT for clinic owners, so they can buy that version. And if it's like repeating the note, like something pops up, just telling the therapist, "You are being lazy, jackass."
Right? Yeah.
That has crossed our minds many times.
Do it.
Yeah, I mean, you're right though. I've seen 100 handwritten notes. We called it the SP note. It wasn't even a soap note. It was S. No new complaints, P, continue PT. And it was for 100 visits.
Jesus.
This is before we took over the network. So I don't do that anymore, thankfully. I'm not an auditor anymore, but I mean, you would be really surprised and shocked at the things you see. So
I'm surprised and shocked you lasted that long.
Well, I wasn't an entrepreneur yet. You know, I was only managing a clinic for someone. I didn't have blogging. I didn't have anything else. So I kept on having more and more kids. I needed extra money.
That's true. You do. You do have a lot of kids.
I do.
They are adorable, though. Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's, if you don't want to try WebPT yet, I don't know what else we can tell you to give it a try at this point.
Yeah. How can they try WebPT, Heidi?
Well, they can just actually go to our website at webpt.com and you can sign up for a demo right off of our site. And you can actually, if you're not interested in maybe looking or getting an EMR, you're satisfied with what you currently have, you could also RSS feed our blog so that you can actually just keep up to date with all of the pertinent information. And same thing with our webinars. We host a free webinar every single month. We have theme topics every month too. And the blogs, we usually post at least 15 blogs a month on that particular topic, and then culminate the month with a webinar that kind of does a synopsis of all of that information into an hour session live with myself and our director of marketing.
And that's great. WebPT.com.
WebPT.com.
And they can fill in that they heard about it on Therapy Insiders, right?
That's right. And there's a couple of other cool tools, if you don't mind me mentioning. There is ICD-10 for PTs.com, which is a WebPT product, which is everything you'd ever want to know about ICD-10 if you are been a laggard and kind of not been up to date with the October 1st deadline. Visit ICD-10 for PTs.com, and you'll find all the information you need there. And then we also have a cool little site that we're starting to pilot right now called getpt.org, which is a PT search tool. And it's right now it's in beta, and it's going to be pretty cool.
Sounds pretty cool.
Heidi.
Yep. Yes.
Yes or no, WebPT is ready to go for ICD-10.
ICD-10 is absolutely ready within WebPT. It's already, you can already test out of it using our ICD-10 tool today. So if you are wanting to test with payers, because I know there's a lot of payers that are implementing some different testing, we're ready to go.
Awesome. See, and I think there are a lot of payers that can't say yes to that question right now.
Now, is WebPT...
We're always cutting edge.
Is it just for insurance-based? We've done a lot, we talked a lot with cash-based, with out-of-network. Is WebPT assist those as well?
Absolutely. We span the gamut from insurance-based to cash-based. And Wendell had a cash-based service clinic, and she used WebPT and is a huge advocate, so she would be a resource or a referral if you wanted to ask her questions about WebPT.
Yep. Shout out to our homie, Ann.
That's right.
Awesome. And then we just had a question come in from Twitter. We'll make this our last Twitter question from Cinema Air, at Cinema Air. Imagine physical therapy in the year 2030. All right, so it's a dark, stormy night. It's year 2030. What do you see?
PT?
Very abstract. I like it. Yes.
PT or EMR? PT?
Physical therapy in the year 2030.
Wow. Okay. I see PT as a primary care provider in which we have much more autonomy today. And direct access is being utilized to its fullest, in which people, consumers have an understanding of what physical therapy is and what physical therapists do, and they are willing to come to us for any neuromuscular or musculoskeletal injuries or even prevention of injuries as a primary care provider. We are at the same level as other current primary care providers.
Nice.
And the technology aspect, I think that we're going to have interoperability. So systems, the question that was asked before, so systems are going to be talking to each other. You'll be able to communicate without fax.
Sweet world. Sweet world you keep painting.
Yes, the treadmill will talk to your EMR. All of that information will be housed in one central system, which will be known as WebPT.
Very, very nice. Very nice cherry on top of that cake. Yeah, that's a nice future. I see us ruling the world because we're going to force everyone to do their exercises and move properly and stop taking less drugs. And they will have to see us every 6 months if they want to live. That's just me.
Well,
happily. Did I say live?
Otherwise you die.
Freudian slip.
All right.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks. Thanks so much for joining us. I feel like every guest that we've had on, there's so much more that we can and want to talk about. You're always more than welcome to come back on. And, I would love to hear more about just the entrepreneurial setup of WebPT and you personally and your husband, some of the stuff you went through. You know, just getting things started that I don't think we hear about enough. You know, we hear about the awesome finished product and the mm-hmm. and the cool stuff that's going on, but you know, just the building a company and being what it's really like being an entrepreneur, I don't think it's heard a lot.
Yeah, we're big believers in bootstrapping. We bootstrapped for the first 2 years. We were on track for $1 million in revenue before we even took a dime from anybody else to help us grow. So we have, yeah, and I do a lot of mentoring of local entrepreneurs here. So I'd be happy to do that. It's a topic I'm extremely passionate about and obviously can speak from experience. And I agree with what you said earlier. You learn so much more from your mistakes than you do from any of your wins. So we've learned a lot over the years. Let's just put it that way.
That's the entrepreneurial motto, I guess. You know, yep. You learn from your mistakes, so expect to learn a lot.
Yeah.
Awesome. Good. Any closing thoughts, Joe?
Hey, I just keep doing your good work and I appreciate you coming on and talking with us. Who should we get on the podcast next? Maybe that's the question. Who should we talk to next?
Ooh, that's a good question.
That's a good question.
Let me think about that. I have all the time in the world. You already had John Childs is another person that, you know, I respect fully in the industry. I know you just had Larry on, but yep. You know, John is a serial entrepreneur himself. So he would be a good choice.
I'm sorry, I'm not talking to John until he pays up to Larry and buys him the steak dinner that he owes him.
It was a mistake, yes.
So, John, if you're listening, if you want to be on this podcast, get Larry his steak. Who else you got?
You deal with the whole profession. So you got to have some good names in your Rolodex.
I will send you a bunch of names. I am just, I'm a little take it off my track here.
You probably have an iPhone, right? Not really a Rolodex anymore.
I don't have an iPhone. I'm an
what?
Android user. Yeah.
Oh,
I'm a
yes.
Galaxy.
No.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Not Android.
All right.
Well, thanks for listening to a podcast that will never air.
We're over again.
I'll air it on my website.
I do have an iPad, though. Have an iPad, and I do have a MacBook Air.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Fine.
How about that?
Right. Okay. Well, this podcast will still be aired.
Send us some names of people you think that we should get on, because I
will absolutely do that.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Urs, any final closing thoughts?
I like the future. You know, where do I see in 30 years?
What do you see in 30 years?
I wish.
Well, that's 15 years,
boy,
actually.
Yeah, well, I've been at the 17 years, and I keep I keep on waiting for the...
How many kids do you have in 30 years, by the way?
Oh, let's see. Probably...
And will it be a boy? Will you have a boy?
Will I have a boy? No, I think I'm going to have a girl softball team. They're all going to be PTs. They're going to help me with all my packing and shipping, and my house will probably just continue to grow because my business keeps on growing, but I keep on doing all the fulfillment myself. Maybe my sweet girls can actually do the customer service.
Employees, is that what you're saying?
I am, yes. It's like it's my own Asian sweatshop.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, this is quickly derailing.
Yeah, but I am waiting for, you know, primary care PT, and I think that all the physios in UK can prescribe pain meds and anti-inflammatories, and the military PTs can do that as well, and they can order x-rays and MRIs, and I think that's not out of our scope as long as we know our red flags, and if a patient isn't improving, then we know to refer them out for possibly more care. I think that, you know, we should be primary, and all the research and data out there is showing that we're much cheaper on an order of thousands of dollars than, you know, an MRI anyway, which is first line care according to some docs. So I think that once Medicare and payers catch up to the amount that we can save them, then we should be primary, and hopefully that will take off. And also Universal Practice Act. You know, I don't want this, I can needle in Texas and not in New York, and I have direct access in New York, but I don't have direct access in Texas. So, you know, it's really weird in the two states I'm licensed. So Universal Practice Act I would also like.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Yeah, that's a great thought. And so yeah, fine. My thought is that, you know, for the big, I think the big takeaway, and Heidi mentioned this several times with her mentoring and kind of growing the company, it's, you know, for the younger clinicians, and definitely for our DPT students that keep listening and commenting, by the way, thank you. It's great, you know, chatting with all you guys and gals on Twitter and through email. It's that, know that you have a support system to take risks and grow and be entrepreneurs if that's what you want to do. Again, there's nothing wrong with being a clinician and treating patients in the clinic, but if you want to aspire to be more, if you want to be an entrepreneur, if you want to try different businesses and ideas, that you have a support system in your profession that are more than happy to mentor and help and guide and answer questions, like Heidi, like Larry, like Jerry, myself, Urs, and Joe. I think that's been the biggest and I think the most fun thing of doing this podcast, is that connection with everyone. And, you know, nobody, that doesn't matter if a company's making millions of dollars or not. I think most of us are more than happy to chat and help out. So, and from talking with Heidi, she seems to be right in line with all that.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you guys for doing this podcast, because I think the more people we can reach to get a similar message out, the better. And I think for too long, we haven't stood up for ourselves as a profession. And, you know, like you said, there's a ton of things we can talk about. And I know you've already talked about branding, but that is so key, of having sort of a unified voice for our profession to be able to execute on these things that we've all talked about that we want in 2013. We have to have advocacy. We have to have people involved. We have to have people representing, you know, the profession as a whole and speaking out on behalf of the profession. And so the more people that, you know, become involved, that are truly engaged in the profession and, you know, believe and love what they're doing, you know, the more we can actually make that 2030 or 2020 vision, if you talk to the APTA, come to fruition. So thank you guys for being advocates and for, you know, getting the word out from those of us who are really trying to make a difference in the profession.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's fun. You know, we enjoy it. No other reason. I mean, we're selfish in that we like to have fun. We like to talk with people, and we like to deliver information that's easy to process, just like your website. You know, I don't want to bang my head against 12 or 10 size font while reading useless stuff. So thanks for that, and thanks for joining us. Again, if you want to check out WebPT, as you should, it's webpt.com. Also, check out Heidi on Twitter at Heidi Janenga, and I'll post all this on our website, therapyinsiders.com. So go ahead, check out the podcast. Please leave us a review on iTunes. Help us go up on the charts, which a lot of you have been. And if there's anything else you want to know, hit up Heidi on Twitter.
Yep.
Thanks for joining us, and I'm going to keep bugging you until you come back on.